Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, May 8th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We're going to get right to the market reports today. We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs, and gold today struggled a little bit. 1290, really very little change. Never made it over 1300, but which is a little bit surprising. We have silver, 1925, down 15 cents. But platinum and palladium were up, both $7. Yesterday, they're both down 20. Today, they're both up 7. Kind of makes you wonder who's really plugging in the numbers to the commodity precious metals sector. Platinum was up $7 at $14.40. Palladium up 7 at $8.07. He must have been preoccupied today. The USDX today was a little bit higher, 0.13, but still way below the 80, 79.37. Crude oil today took back a little bit of its gains yesterday, 0.52 at 125. At 100.25. And the paper markets today, you had the Dow up 32 points at 16,551. They have the NASDAQ down 16 at 4,051. The S&P down 2, 1875, along with the 10-year yield today at 2.60. And all of Wall Street was listening to Janet Yellen, and she calls two items disturbing. Of course, one is the unemployment and what people are actually getting paid and how far their dollar, their wages. So, you know, it's almost embarrassing. And we're going to be talking about money and about people really not understanding, I guess, the concept or understanding a little bit.
Hardly anything.
About money. Hardly anything.
Hardly anything. All they know is how to count it.
And that's spend the, and they it. Think they that's know the, how to spend it. They
even
know
that, they're not clear on the concept that you can only spend as much as you have.
Yeah.
All right? And that is how, and you should only be able to spend how much you earn. That's all foreign to them. No, these are foreign concepts. We'll get into it in a little while.
Yep.
There's been a test conducted on kind of a global basis. Number of countries. They were asked three questions that deal with money and finance. And these are simple questions, and you will be surprised at the answers. So in the meantime, got Wendy Wilson here from thepowerherbs.com. Hello, Wendy. How are you doing?
Hello, Al. Hello, Melody. I'm fine. You know what? I have this old saying that this money thing, we earn it. We earn it in a sweatshop, but we spend it in air conditioning.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an old. I don't know if that's exactly an old saying, because I remember when air conditioning came in. I hate to think that that makes it old. Wasn't that long ago for me, at least. In any case,
yeah.
What's your position on supplements? Do you have any old sayings on supplements? Are they all good?
Well, that's an interesting question. Yeah, the U.S. government wanted to answer that question, you know, are all supplements good? And so what they did is they did a report, and they sent it to the U.S. Government Accountability Office, did a report, and they sent it to U.S. Congress. And what they did is the report was about testing dietary supplements to check for any potentially dangerous ingredients, and also to check for deceptive marketing. So the report wound up at the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. Had some good information in there, Al, Melody, but I believe the main purpose of the report was to try to usher in more legislation over the U.S. supplement market through the FDA. And some people may say, well, why would that be a good thing? You know, more oversight for supplements, that's a good thing. Well, ask yourself how the FDA is doing with prescription drugs. Are they less expensive, and are they 100% safe? Well, are they?
No.
Okay.
They're not 100% safe, and everybody understands it if they bother to look at it.
Yep.
And the question becomes, I mean, if you want to do something on safety, and you're concerned about vitamins, let's compare vitamins, the safety record for vitamins, against the safety record of the drugs that are approved by the FDA.
Oh, yeah. All we have to do is interview, some doctors in the morgue and see. I don't think I've ever seen death by herb on a certificate of death. I have seen death by, birth control. On a death certificate.
Yeah, they have death by mushrooms. If you get the wrong mushrooms, they can be a problem.
Right. Well, anyway, getting back to the report, they tested the herbs for some very common hazardous contaminants like lead, arsenic, mercury, cadmium, and other residues that would be considered pesticides. And they wanted also to check the negative health consequences if you consumed these type of contaminants, and they had a review. And according to the report, some basic herbs like garlic, they said, ginseng, ginkgo, and chamomile, they said, get ready, it could be life-threatening to the elderly, not because they had any dangerous contaminants in there that were even exceeding any oversight limits the FDA Environmental Protection Agency set. But they said that those herbs are dangerous to the elderly because the herbs interfered with their prescription drugs. That's right.
I get that. It's not a question of the prescription drugs interfering with natural sources,
right?
Natural products. It's a problem with the natural products interfering with the artificial drugs created by Big Pharma.
Right. Now, the report said that they just assume all elderly are on medication. They said 85% of the elderly take at least one prescription drug in the course of a year's time, and 58% take at least three prescription drugs. So I do think that this report kind of misleads Congress, because it also stated that in the report there wasn't any scientific studies to support any health benefits of, let's say, garlic, they said. They said, quote, there are no studies that confirm garlic lowers blood sugar or increases the release of insulin in humans. So,
are there any studies to prove that they don't?
Absolutely. I call this segment the garlic studies.
Okay.
There's lots of them, not only in the U.S., but all over the world, Al. Actually, if you look at studies, one-tenth of the medical literature studies have been done on garlic.
Really?
One-tenth. Yeah.
One.
So
yeah.
One of the studies was published in the Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine Journal, which showed that garlic restores antioxidants, reduces free radical damage, and it helps with vascular diseases like high blood pressure and diabetes. And then if you want to go overseas, the Department of Biology at Kuwait University determined that garlic has a definite power over your blood lipids, lowers your blood pressure and cholesterol. And then a study at the Department of Epidemiology Healthcare Research at the University of Limburg, that's in the Netherlands, they found that garlic reduces all cardiovascular risks, and they confirmed that fresh garlic in large doses is the best to use. So there's lots of studies. I could go on and on about just garlic, but there's lots of studies on herbs. The only problem with the research you see is they're trying to find that special chemical in the plant that can help them make a drug that does the same thing, or they think yep. does the same thing. So, but you know, Al, herbs are just like foods. Where they're grown, how they're treated, how they're harvested impacts their purity. And that's the same in your supplements if they're made with whole food products. So organic standards, as you know, are under attack. I think it's in order to level the playing field between organics and conventional foods, and also kind of blur the lines between the GMO type of foods too. So herbs, just like conventionally grown foods, can contain pesticides and residues yeah. in or outside legal limits, you know, depending on who the supplier is and how they're treating the herbs. So herbs that are covered with anti-mold or antifungal, or at least one of the 865 registered pesticides, is very likely, unless you demand certified organic in your supplements out there.
Okay, when you say demand certified organics,
yep.
we're going to look for somebody's advertising. We can't just walk into the vitamin store and make a demand exactly.
Well that's...
I guess we can, and they're going to just say, yeah, we have them over here. They're on
well,
cell
the thing
farm.
Is... The good thing is, you know, on the label, the FDA requires contact information. So consumers can actually contact either the manufacturer or the distributor of the product to find out specifically the level, the grade of organic that's in that product. And I encourage people to do that. So if you insist,
why do you encourage people to do that?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a consumers are being savvy out there. You know, whether they buy from apothecary herbs or not, they should, you know, they are worked hard for their money. They should get a really good organic product.
And it's also a way of essentially lobbying suppliers and say, look, here's what we want. And if they get enough calls, we have to presume the suppliers are going to say, you know, we need to start moving our product in the direction that these consumers want.
Yeah, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Not just supply and demand, but also a certain amount of political power being exerted here. We're saying this is what we want. What's all this other crapola? We want this. We want the real deal.
Yeah, vote with your wallet. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting report that RMIT University in Australia published in the Journal of Environmental Research in April of this year. It was regarding what non-organic foods do in your body as far as affecting your health. And in their study, what they did is they showed that by removing conventional foods that are a lot of times treated with the pesticides, synthetic chemicals, they all show up in your urine. If you don't eat organic, on average, there are 6 different phosphate pesticides that are going to be in your urine. Okay, so they say if you remove these chemicals, if you stop eating conventional and go more organic, you're going to protect your central nervous system because those other chemicals are neurotoxins. So they not only affect the neurological center of the pests, it also poisons humans as well. So you know, so if you want to get rid of the pesticides, you know, I suggest you do, because they're going to sabotage your endocrine system, that's your hormone production system. And then if you put in some antibiotics in there, you know, that's more chemicals, because now they're treating produce trees with the fire blight with antibiotic sprays, because they're still allowed to say we're organic because there's no other way to save the fruit trees, until recently when European and Canadian growers, they're using an copper peptide spray, and it kills the fungus. It's really great.
A copper peptide?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it's
all
organic
right.
that way.
Right.
But let me give, before we go, I wanted to let listeners know, if you're on the internet, the Environmental Working Group has listed some foods that you definitely want to avoid. They call it their Dirty Dozen list, and these foods are primarily going to have a lot of pesticides on them. And then they also have a list called the Clean 15, which typically you'll find more organic growers growing. So they can be found at EWG, that's E as in Edward, W as in Winter, G as in George, .org, and you can look up their lists there. So, and I also want to mention, we at Apothecary Herbs, we went through the ATF National Laboratory Center testing in Maryland of our products, Al. Took 18 months, but we got a clean review. All our herbal liquids are within TILF standards. That's the highest organic standard you can get, and all within normal limits. So we are very proud of that standing.
All right. That's certainly good news for people who want organic products.
Yep, that's what we do.
What do you think about GMO?
Well, I don't like the GMOs, actually. I think the GMOs are contaminating, you know, the heirloom seed. The poor farmers trying to grow organic stuff, they're being outed left and right with the GMO. I just think when you try to usurp and rewrite God's copyright, you're in for trouble.
You know, I have some apples around here. I just threw them out the other day. I've had them for probably, I'll bet you, at least 2 months, maybe more. And I picked them up, and I was eating apples, and I thought there were a dozen of them individually wrapped in a 4x3 grid of plastic. And they looked like Christmas tree ornaments. They had the same color. Everyone had the same color and patterns and the same size. And I thought when I bought them, I thought, you know, they must have one extraordinary selection system for harvesting these crops, because these things are almost identical. Got them home, tried one out. I didn't know if they'd be good or bad. Tried one out, and it actually tasted pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate 3 or 4 of them. And then I had one at night before I went to bed one night, and I cut off about a third of it and left the other two-thirds sitting on my desk. And when I got up in the morning, I looked at it, and it was just as white. The meat of the apple was just as white as it was when I cut it the night before. And I thought of apples as a kid. You could get an apple, and it would turn brown as fast as you were eating it.
Absolutely.
Right? I kept that apple. I don't know how long I had that apple. I might have had it for 2 weeks. And it started to shrivel a little bit, losing water as it, but the white stayed white the whole time. It never turned brown. And what I'm getting to is it didn't rot, which means it won't digest.
Well, right? It sounds like it was spliced with the spider DNA.
now you're really wrecking it for me. I thought I ate about 4 of those apples, and then I threw them out. And now you're telling me I got spider DNA that I've been trying.
Yeah, they do that. Apparently, spider DNA has lots of vitamin C and protects the fruit from spoiling. So
they did a heck of a job, but if it won't spoil, to my mind, it won't digest. I look at spoilage and digestion as essentially the same thing. It means that I'm eating these apples, I might as well eat styrofoam peanuts. I'm not going to get any nutrition out of them. They're pretty, but I don't think I get any nutrition. I'm not eating any more. We have 15 seconds.
Oh, sure. They can call Apothecary Herbs. Yeah, call Apothecary Herbs. We'll send you a free product catalog, 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit our site, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, Al. Thanks, Melanie.
Okay, Wendy. Thank you. Powerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief Formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners that our pricing is very, very good for Silver Eagles, $275 over spot, large volumes. We can help you out. One of my clients today, she says, well, I didn't hear about you until just recently. She says, I bought silver rounds. Her price for silver rounds were higher than what my price is for silver eagles by a dollar. She purchased a few gold eagles. This was when spot was $1,300. She paid $1,400 for a bar. She paid $100 for a Credit Suisse bar, 1 ounce. She could have saved $30 per ounce and purchased a 1 ounce gold eagle coin. So, folks, you know, you hear a lot of powerful people on the radio. You hear a lot of powerful advertisements. And that doesn't mean their prices are good. Always shop your prices, and folks will match and compete with our competitors as long as they're legitimate pricing for the product at hand. So, you know, she learned the hard way. She learned a hard lesson. Now she can buy gold and silver from Discount Gold and Silver, and at least, you know, she'll be able to perhaps make up some of her loss along the way as she purchases at lower prices. So, and I was watching Jim Cramer on CNBC last night. And we talked about a stock. It was Whole Foods, was down 18% on the day. And what he said was, I don't care about the price that was. I care about the price of the future price of this stock. And that's how folks should view gold and silver, more so than how they view stocks, because the fundamentals for gold and silver are there where they are not for shares. And I just, folks need to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And today, Congress is to vote on renewing the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Did you ever hear of that one?
No, I don't think so. Maybe in a dream or something like that, but I don't remember hearing of it otherwise.
We'll call it OPIC, not OPEC, OPIC. They use taxpayer backing to finance and insure American companies when they want to set up operations overseas.
What they're talking about is they're not using this to fund American companies. They're using this to fund multinational companies that are based in the United States. These multinationals don't have any patriotism. They're just in it for the money. And here we have the government. They're not doing what's best for the people of the United States of America. They're doing what's best for the multinationals.
Let me finish as it gets better, Al.
Oh, no.
In 2012, they approved a $20 million loan to help an American businessman build a luxury car dealership in Ukraine. Here's how they described the project when they were financing with taxpayer money. This is the description of the project. The proceeds of the loan will be used to expand Winter Import Ukraine's automobile business, construct and operate Winter Auto City, which will have two new state-of-the-art dealership facilities for Porsche and Land Rover and Jaguar automobiles, each of which will be the 3S, the showroom, service, and stock. The car dealer, John Hynansky, happens to be a good friend of Guess. He's a good friend of Vice President Joe Biden.
And what a coincidence.
A major donor to Obama and to Biden.
Oh, my God.
And Biden spoke in Ukraine in 2009. He had called his very good friend John a very prominent businessman. In the same speech, Biden said democracy and free markets work best when they deliver what people most want. And, of course, Jaguars and Porsches are probably what some people want, but now
they're not manufactured in this country.
Now that Ukrainians have them, with U.S. taxpayer backing. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's real interesting. You know, it's another one of those things that I think I've reached the point where nothing can make me vomit. You know, I've kind of hit a point where my gag reflex has been struck so many times by so many articles about politicians and government that there's nothing out there that can make me puke anymore. It wasn't always that way, but now I think it is.
And how do we know the $20 million even went into a dealership? 10 of it probably went into a bank account for Biden when he retires. And
yeah, I agree.
Did they even find the $6.5 billion that went missing right about the same time Hillary left?
Yeah, I understand.
So
where did that go?
Where does that go?
Uh-huh. Just one of those things. You know, if I steal $650, I'm probably going to prison. Politicians allow $6.5 billion to disappear, and not a problem. You know?
I mean, they don't even
It's insane.
I mean, they don't even have anybody looking for it.
I know. You know, it reminds me, I can't think of the man's name who had worked with the Clintons at the Rose Law Firm. He was one of Clinton's principal aides in the White House. And I can't think of his name, but he was found dead in a park in Washington, D.C.
Vince Foster.
Yeah, that's right, Vince Foster. And the first day after his death, Bill Clinton was being interviewed someplace, and he said, well, we'll probably never know what really happened to him. If I were president of the United States, and I had access to the CIA and the FBI and now the NSA, and I had all of those spies and research and police and rest of it at my disposal, I would not admit that we will probably never find out what happened to Vince Foster unless I knew for sure that I was going to make certain We never found out what happened to Vince Foster. And it's that story, if you follow my drift on that, it was just bizarre. You know, I mean, if Clinton could have said, we will not rest until we find out what happened. Now, we'll probably never know. And he said that in the first day, first 24 hours after Foster was found dead. It's the same thing we're talking about here. $6.5 billion disappears and nobody's even looking. That implies somebody already knows. They know where the money is and they don't want it found. And that's why someone in a position of power has said, let's not look for that. We'll look for other things.
Amazing.
Yes, it is.
So tell me about the test that we're going to have today.
All right, let me see. I'm going to have to look for this right now. Here it is. Here's an article that was in the Atlantic magazine. It was republished on Yahoo Finance. And the headline is, most people in the world have no idea how to manage their money. We're going to go through this, and they pose three questions. All right? And they posed these questions around the world, number of countries, Russia and Italy and France and the United States and so on. And they were surprised at the answer. Question number one. Suppose you had $100 in a savings account and the interest rate was 2% per year. After 5 years, how much do you think you would have in the account if you left the money to grow? A, more than $102. B, exactly $102. C, less than $102. And D, do not know and or refuse to answer. All right? This is, I know these questions are easier, would be easier for folks if you could see them in writing in front of you rather than me just reading them, but nevertheless, this is not rocket science. You got $100, you put it in the bank, you leave it there for 5 years, interest rate is 2% per year. What are you going to have at the end of 5 years? The answer is obviously more than $102. Second question, imagine that the interest rate on your savings account is 1% per year, and the inflation rate is 2% per year. After 1 year, would you be able to buy more than, that's the first, A, more than, B, exactly the same as, or C, less than today with the money in the account, D, do not know, refuse to answer? And the answer is C, you would be able to buy less because the interest, the inflation rate of 2% is greater than the 1% interest rate, so you're going to be losing 1% a year, all right? You are going to, your savings will be depreciated, devalued by means of inflation. Three, do you think that the following statement is true or false? This is, good God, it's not even multiple guess. You understand? Well, I guess it is. They've got three answers here, so perhaps it is multiple guess. But in any case, do you think the following statement is true or false? Buying a single company stock usually provides a safer return than a stock mutual fund. A, true. B, false. C, do not know, refuse to answer. Well, the answer is false. They are, from conventional, and you know, a single stock, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You buy multiple stocks, you have a higher probability of avoiding negative surprises, but of course you have less of a probability of hitting a home run also when you buy it. But nevertheless, this is standard doctrine for investors. You invest in the stock mutual fund. So they ask in the story, they said, how did you do? Did you respond correctly to all three questions? If you did, then you belong to a surprisingly small global minority. In Russia, 96% of those surveyed could not answer the three questions correctly. 96%. While that might be expected of a post-communist nation, the mecca of capitalism didn't exactly yield glowing results. Only 30% of Americans aced the quiz. The best performing respondents were the Germans, 53% got a perfect score, the Swiss, 50%. But this still leaves almost half of each country's population without a basic understanding of financial matters. In countries with relatively strong economies, the numbers are sobering. 79% of Swedes, 75% of Italians, 73% of Japanese, and 69% of French could not respond correctly to all three questions. Now, I'm amazed and appalled by that study. These three questions are relatively simple and should not require an advanced degree as a prerequisite for answering correctly. There's very little in these questions that implicates higher knowledge of money and economics, and yet 70% of Americans can't answer all three simple questions correctly. 70%, that's chilling. That's like finding that 70% of Americans can't correctly answer questions that might be asked of a fourth grade student on math, English, and American history. The Bible warns my people perish for lack of knowledge. I submit that the people are also impoverished by lack of knowledge. The majority of Americans who do not understand the nature of money will be exploited, robbed, and impoverished by those who do. I'm willing to bet you that if you were to do a study, we all know we have problems with income inequality in terms of income distribution inequality. It's the top 0.1% are making a killing. The bottom 90% are barely hanging on. All right, there's a disproportionate distribution of wealth. I'm going to make you a bet that if you could look for one thing that the top 1%, top 0.1%, one thing that they know that the vast majority of Americans do not, they understand money. They understand currency. They understand what's happening with interest and inflation. They understand how and where to invest their funds and what to avoid, how to avoid being ripped off, how to maximize their profits. And the point being, the majority, again, of Americans who don't understand the nature of money, they're going to be exploited, robbed, and impoverished by those who do. Those of you who'd rather spend your time watching Dancing with the Stars, if you'd rather do that than study to understand the nature of money and fundamental economics, will eventually find yourself dancing with the homeless in dark alleys. I mean, you have to understand more about money than merely how to count it. I've had a friend, I've told the story on this program in the past, I'm sure a couple of times, and I'll tell it again because we're down to the last minute and a half before we take our break, and therefore I got to do something to fill in the gap, you understand? A friend of mine, back in the 90s. He had a degree in political science. He'd go over to 7-Elevens and convenience stores at lunchtime, and he'd go in with a $6 bill. This would have a picture of Bill Clinton on it on one side, Monica Lewinsky on the other side, some jokes and wisecracks on the face of the money. But nevertheless, and it didn't look like, you could see that it didn't look any more real than Monopoly money. But he'd walk into these 7-Elevens, he'd hand them a $6 bill for a slushie and a hot dog and a bag of chips. They would give him change on his $6 bill. The only problem is when they looked for a drawer in the cash register to tuck away that $6 bill, they had a space for the ones and a space for the fives and tens and twenties and so on. There was no place for the six, so they'd typically lift the drawer up and stick the cash and stick the $6 bill under the cash drawer in their cash register. Well, the point is these people don't understand anything about money other than how to count it. That's all they see. They see ones and fives and, in this case, sixes and tens and twenties and so on. That's all they know. It's not enough. You have to learn this stuff. It is the essence of what's happening in much of the world right now. If you don't understand something about money, you are going to be as easily robbed as a child who loses her candy. And kind of like taking candy from a baby, that's how it is to take wealth from people who don't understand money. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we know Janet Yellen. She, even though we know she's the fall guy, the fall woman for everything, she knows what's going on today. She was questioned about. She was questioned by Senator Dan Coats. He remarked that the businessmen in Indiana told him that their businesses were underperforming at this time because of the uncertainty they felt as a result of federal taxation and regulatory policies. She had made a statement. We all know what she said yesterday. They're all there to do what's necessary to, you know, keep things going. But she also said today that when she was referencing the GBO, the Congressional Budget Office's long-term budget projection, she told them that under current policies, the federal government's deficits will rise to unsustainable levels. So, you know,
when did she predict that to happen? Maybe in the next century? Is that what she's thinking?
Well, you know, she didn't say.
It's already unsustainable. I understand that. It's like me predicting that Bill Clinton's going to win election when he runs for the president.
The whole point of that is it's there for people to know. It's not to make her sound any, you know, very, you know, like she's an Einstein or anything. But the point is they're telling the people. People need to wake up and do something.
Yeah.
They can't let their money sit there. People have an opportunity. The stock markets are at high numbers. Get your profit out. Protect it. That was my point. They're there telling you. So you're either smart enough.
They're conceding that the day is coming.
The day is coming.
Kind of when this whole thing is going to blow up. All by itself. That's the implication. If it's unsustainable levels of debt, and that's what she's essentially talking about, we're coming to a point where the debt is so great that it can't be sustained, and that means something is going to snap, crack, boom, crash, whatever, collapse. She's admitting this. This is the head of the Federal Reserve. We've been talking about it for several years. We can see it coming. We don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but insofar as the chairwoman of the Federal Reserve is validating that notion, we can assume, it's not unreasonable to infer that this moment when the unsustainable nature of our debt system finally becomes apparent to all, that moment is not so far away. They're admitting it now, in part, I think, to say, well, we warned you. You know, we told you back in May of 2014 that, you know, it was becoming unsustainable. It's a little bit of cover your backside against what they know is going to be a certain amount of rage. They're going to say, well, we told you people, weren't you paying attention? And the truth of the matter is you do have to pay attention. Every one of you has to pay attention, and not just to me or Melody or Janet Yellen. You've got to pay close attention because we are quite possibly all in a certain amount of peril. Now, how close we are to the day when big trouble arrives, unknown. You know, no one can predict it with any accuracy. Someone might get lucky and guess correctly of when that day is coming, but nobody really knows. And with the possible exception of the government, if they decide to pull the plug, if they decide to make it happen, well, and throw the switch, well, they could say, well, it's going to happen on a particular day. They wouldn't tell us in advance, of course, but they would know when that day was. You and I still would not. But it does appear that we're getting closer to that day, and it is therefore incumbent on you to prepare. You know, you gotta understand what if this happens. The great problem, if we reach the point where we finally have to admit that the debt scheme, the national debt, the deficit to some degree, and the debt in particular, can't be sustained, can't grow larger, guess what? That moment will mark the time when they admit they can't pay all the bills. It'll mark the time when all those paper treasuries will see their value diminish dramatically. Maybe 30%, maybe 50%. In my estimation, before we're done, they're going to lose 80 to 90% of their face value, their purchasing power. It'll be diminished by that much. And those of you that are holding those paper debt instruments, I'm going to predict that if U.S. Treasuries suddenly reach a point where some significant portion of their value has to just admit, we can't pay, you're only going to get 40%, 20%, 10%. It's all we can give you. Something like that, I suspect there will be a contagion, and this will spread to virtually all paper debt instruments. It may start with treasuries, but it'll go to stocks. It'll go to most debts that are memorialized with a paper debt instrument. And if it happens, everyone who's holding paper, including bank accounts and 401ks, pension accounts, savings accounts, cash, buried in a jar in the backyard or whatever, you're going to see your wealth diminished dramatically. And this is part of the reason that, you know, we just talked about the need. We talked about the prevalence of ignorance of economic things, financial and economic, in this country. And we are talking ultimately the need. You got to know something. You got to know at least enough where you can see some fundamentals and make some intelligent choices that will protect you in the future. And if you don't understand now, it's very unlikely that you're going to make an intelligent choice tomorrow, a month from now, you know, however much time we have left. First order of business, you've got to educate yourself. And if you can do that, then you can look around and you can say, wait, I think I see what I should do to protect me, protect my family, protect, you know, whatever wealth I've accumulated in life. I'm going to have to put it someplace other than paper. That's the great lesson in this, from my perspective. And if you agree with that, then where are you going to put it? Melody, where will you put your wealth if you can't put it into paper?
I would choose gold and silver. And you buy gold and silver to protect your purchasing power. And silver will do very well. And people, I had a gentleman tell me yesterday, he says, you know, he says, I went online to find out how to buy gold and silver. And I was inundated by all these things to do and don't do and why you want this. And he says, I just, He says, I just picked up your phone number and called you. It was much easier, and that's what happens. There's so much information on the internet. It's very easy to get sidetracked. It's very easy to pick up the wrong information. And we just encourage folks to give us a call. But, you know, Al, we talk about people that are on food stamps. We talk about people who can't make it. And there's reasons why they can't make it. The costs of things. I mean, we talk about food. We talk about gasoline prices. And there's others that we fail to mention. And you have some information on that today.
No, say again. I'm not sure which article you're talking about right now.
Why people are poor.
Oh, why people are poor. All right. Well, let me just blah, blah, blah. Five reasons. Yeah. This is in the Wall Street Journal. They list five reasons why you are poor. That's the headline. And according to Ford, let me just get to the reasons. I'll cut here to the chase because we've only got about 6 minutes left. There's five reasons. Part of it, they say, employee pay as a share of national income has fallen to its lowest level since 1951. Employees, you get that? If you're an employee, you're being paid at a level comparable to what was true in 1951. This despite the fact that productivity is up. It makes people feel poor, and here are five reasons to support that, at least five from the Wall Street Journal. Child care costs surge. Number one, child care costs. Child care payments for families with employed mothers rose 50%. From 2002 to 2011, and 250% over the last three decades. And that's according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Family income after taxes and other deductions, meanwhile, rose by just 0.6%. Your child care costs are way up, and your family income after taxes, and that's the important point here, after taxes has gone up by just 0.6%. What does it mean? It means that the government is constantly cooking the frogs, and they're just raising the temperature, raising the taxes just a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And even if you are more productive, and even if you're making more money, government is raising taxes to eat most of your gains. And as a result, here we are. Child care, again, one of the problems. Rent-to-income ratio. Many young Americans can't afford to save for the down payment for a home, partly because a large portion of the income is being eaten up by rent. 50% of U.S. renters spent more than 30% of their gross income on rent in 2010, up a record 12% from the 38% of households grappling with such high rent-to-income ratio a decade prior. Rent is up so high that people go out and we want to show off and want to say we're living in a nice home and we're prosperous and the rest of that, and we tend to pay more than we should for rent. And one of the solutions here is you've got to probably learn to live under more humble circumstances so you can save money to perhaps buy a home or invest your money in other circumstances. But if you're paying 30% of your income for rent, I've seen another report back a while ago. They paid 30% of your income to ride an automobile, to have an automobile. That's 60% of your income out of housing and transportation. Throw in some food and some taxes, and you don't have enough money to see a movie. Third item is student loans. The average cost of tuition fees at public four-year colleges jumped 27% from 2008 to 2013. That's not terrible in a five-year span. Averages out to roughly 5% a year. And with it, the amount of debt students face. According to a February report from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, student loan debt increased $114 billion in 2013 alone to $1.08 trillion. The average college graduate's debt load is now $29,400, up roughly 6%, up roughly 6% a year since 2008. However, many students can't pay. Almost 12% of the student loan balances are more than 90% delinquent. How about savings? Number four item. Top-tier interest rates have fallen from 5.3% in October 2007 to around 1% today. Put your money in the bank and collect a whole 1%. For those on fixed incomes, including many retirees who rely on CDs and other fixed income investments, this is bad news, since low interest rates dramatically reduce their purchasing power. For all Americans, these low interest rates will not outpace inflation. All right, you get 1% out of the bank. Government is shooting for 2% inflation. They're hoping to get it up to that, the official inflation. But John Williams will calculate 8-9% as real inflation in this country. If you put your money in the bank and you're getting 1% interest, the real interest rate is 8%, or excuse me, the real inflation rate is 8%, you're going to lose 7% of your wealth every year you leave the money sitting in the bank. It is no formula for success. Five wages. Study the Economic Policy Institute last year found the median worker saw wage growth of just 5% between 1979 and 2012. Wages went up 5% in a period of 33 years. Despite productivity growth of 75%, the vast majority of U.S. workers, including white-collar and blue-collar workers and those with and without college degree, have endured more than a decade of wage stagnation. Census Bureau found similar wage stagnation with the real median income of $51,000 being virtually unchanged from the late 1970s and early 1980s. We're not making any more money than we did 30 years ago. But I guarantee you costs are up. We are being impoverished by government's management, mismanagement, malfeasance, and perhaps just flat-out betrayal in terms of in regard to operating our economy. And we are not going to begin to escape this betrayal. We're not going to be able to rebuild our standard of living until more than a few of us begin to be knowledgeable about how the economy works and how to handle our money and how to invest our money and how to lean on the congressmen and the senators and presidents to say, you got to do what's right financially, not just what's right for special interests. You have to do what's right for the whole country. Until we educate ourselves, we're going to continue to be impoverished. I'm out of time. Melody's out of time. We're on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.